This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
There it is, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. 855-752-4842 is the number. You can call us right now if you want to join us, man. We don't care. You know, just jump in with whatever it is you want to ask us. Yeah, great show. Tuesday night, Johnny Lupinacci. I just got a message that he is listening from where he is, but unable to participate. I think something with being 30,000 feet in the air, that makes it a little bit restrictive to doing a radio show tonight. But yeah, it is Busted Pencils. Great guest tonight. And though talking about one of the best things, though, Busted Pencils, we get to meet lots of great people. We said last week we had the first remote from the Minocqua Brewing Company. And you know, the best thing about Minocqua Brewing Company is Busted Pencils is sponsored by the Minocqua Brewing Company, who sued the state of Wisconsin to end its parasitic voucher system that hurts public schools. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy a progressive beer. And yeah, man, great stuff out there. Great guest. We're going to throw this name out there before I introduce Horace Mann. What does everybody remember? Horace Mann, that's our topic tonight, because our guest, he began his career in 1970 at the University of Massachusetts in Salem. He has over 50 years experience in education, including roles as, oh, we just found out, kindergarten teacher all the way through high school, adjunct professor, principal, superintendent. He played a pivotal role in establishing the public charter schools in New Hampshire. He has studied Horace Mann's educational principles and privatization, his advanced degrees in organization management. He's the author of several books, including the book we're talking about tonight, Horace's Hope, Friedman's Folly, The Purpose and Promise of Common Schools in a Democratic Republic. Welcome to Busted Pencils, Curtis Cardine. Curtis, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for that nice introduction.
You got a lot of lead in there to give you that introduction. You have been busy in 50 years. So,
I have,
okay.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
But always so, in education and sidelines in business.
Well, you've got a heck of a resume, lots of things. So, we got some great questions. You have a brand new book just released in April 2024. Would tell people, go out, check it out, Horace's Hope, Friedman's Folly, The Purpose and Promise of Public Common Schools in a Democratic Republic. Before we get into it, though, Curtis, Horace Mann, who? Who the heck is Horace Mann, and why do we care?
Well, Horace Mann was the founder of public education. He and most of them were of the Whig Party at the time. Started public education in the northeast of our country, and there were other leaders in New York and in the South, some in the South, not many, but they started public schools in the New England states, in Massachusetts in particular, early on. Public schools in the United States weren't mandatory until 1919. A lot of people don't know that. They think, oh, they go way back. And Horace Mann died in 1854. But he had an illustrious career doing many things. Prior to that, he was key in getting mental patients the proper treatment rather than being locked up in jails, which was what they did with him in that time period. He was for emancipation early on, and influenced education beyond belief. Next name that you hear about is Thomas Dewey, but Horace has always been a favorite. I did all my undergraduate and graduate work in his schools that he started. So
wow,
my love of Horace Mann goes way back. Yeah.
Well, you know, so Horace Mann, just to remind people, that's why I said, let's start with who is it and why do we care? Well, as you say, it's like the public education system that we have today. Yeah, I think a lot of people go, well, you know, America's always had a public education system, but not the way that Horace Mann envisioned it. In fact, he had six principles around what public education was. And I wonder, before we even really get deep into the book, Curtis, you know, can you remind us of those six principles?
Well, I'll give you the short ones. I'll probably elongate on them once we get into the other question. Number one was, citizens cannot maintain both ignorance and freedom. Okay. And I use the word democratic republic for a reason. Most of the people at the time thought the only people who should be educated were landowning people with money. And those are the people that went to private schools at the time, etc. And when we formed a democratic republic, Horace Mann became a key person in saying, okay, what should public education look like in that republic? This education should be paid for, controlled, and maintained by the public. Okay, so that's a key issue. This education should be provided in schools that embrace children from varying backgrounds. And by that, he meant various races, various everything, but economic backgrounds also. This education must be non-sectarian. That's a key thing. This education must be taught using the tenets of a free society. And he was very much for moral education. And last but not least, it must be provided by well-trained professional teachers, which is why he set up normal schools to train young ladies, first of all, then gentlemen, to be teachers.
So
one
that
of those first places was Salem.
Well, and yeah. So you talk about that, the state normal school. I got to imagine that a lot of the teachers that are listening to the show tonight, probably a good portion of them did their education at an institution that probably served as a normal school to begin with. I know me, I went to a state institution in Pennsylvania, but I know that it was founded as what you just said, a state normal school. And what you're saying then is that Horace Correct. Mann was the influencer of the normal school movement.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And so that's
very
that
much so.
That quality commitment to educating teachers, then that foundation is, and that's where they come from. So, it's Busted Pencils. It's fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Our guest, Curtis Cardine, the number 855-752-4842. Horace Mann, we're talking about his new book, Horace's Hope, Freedman's Folly, the Purpose and Promise of Common Schools in a Democratic Republic, laying out the six principles of what it is that public. Curtis, when you lay this and you put forward the six principles, one of the things that really reminds people is the whole idea that this is a non-sectarian, that the curriculum is in this idea of the commons must be put forward, qualified teachers. Nothing about today's privatization movement sounds like it would be jumping on to the six tenets of what Horace Mann said makes things public.
That's correct. And when you think about when public schools came into being nationally in 1919, most of the states incorporated 10 parts of Horace's principles in their state constitutions. So the original things that it's not non-sectarian, that's a direct pull from the principles. And we've forgotten the principles as we've moved to the folly of creating public, we call them public schools, but they're not, they're private. Even the charters are private. And I take that back. The original idea for charters was Ray Buttigieg, the University of Massachusetts, a fond believer in Horace Mann. And I had the privilege of sitting in on his discussions in 1972. And he proposed, and the unions accepted his proposal for charter school. He's actually the guy coined the term, which would be run by the school districts, but teachers would come forward with the idea and create these, and they have some kind of independence from the other place. And that's the kind of charter schools we started in New Hampshire.
Mm. Yeah, and which was, they really have their foundation as a public. Sherry and Horicon, thanks for saying hi. How are you doing out there? Got to read that text. Love that. Hey, you also can participate in the chat and or give us a call, 855-752-4842. What do you know about Horace Mann? Well, we have an expert tonight on Horace Mann, Curtis Cardine, and his new book, Horace's Hope, Freedman's Folly, The Purpose and Promise of Public Common Schools in a Democratic Republic. It's there. All right. Let's think, though. You authored the book, though, as kind of like, so you got Horace's Hope, Freedman's Folly. We've introduced everybody to Horace Mann. Who's this Freedman character you're talking about?
Well, he's very famous, very active politically in the 1950s. He was the first one after Brown versus Board of Education to say, hey, parents should have a choice of where they go and go to school, and propose that they be given vouchers to attend any school they wanted to attend. He made the mistake of one of the big mistakes in our country is people thinking capitalism is our form of government, which it isn't. Our form of government is democratic republic.
Okay.
And Dr. Freedman, I will get into more after the break. I think we're going
to
be taking.
Yeah. We're getting ready to come up on a break. We are having a discussion. Horace Mann. Horace's Hope, Freedman's Folly, The Purpose and Promise of Public Common Schools in a Democratic Republic. Our guest is the author, Curtis Cardine. We are discussing this. We just finally got into a little bit about Freedman. That would be Milton Freedman. When we get back, we're going to pick up and start right there to make sure we understand Freedman, because we want to get into the book, Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded, back after the break. You know that song, One Way or Another. Yes. Well, how about this way? Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded, Education Talk, Educated Educators, Talking Education. 855-752-4842 is the number. Our guest, Curtis Cardine, his new book, Horace's Hope, Freedman's Folly, The Purpose and Promise of Public Common Schools in a Democratic Republic. We had a little primer reminding us who Horace Mann was. But you put Horace Mann and you put him next to this person, Freedman, Milton Freedman. Curtis, we were just talking a little bit before the break, though. Let's really go back in, though, and say, okay, so who was Milton Freedman, and why, if you're a public education advocate, do we need to know about him?
Well, you need to know what his philosophy was. He was an economist, as were a lot of the starters of the charter school movement here. And he first proposed vouchers in 1973, I believe it was. But anyway, he wrote a book called Freedom to Choose. And you'll hear that word freedom thrown out a lot, Moms for Freedom. and people act like they didn't have freedom prior to that, and they certainly did. I went to Catholic school when I was a kid because my parents chose that, but guess what? They paid for it.
Right.
Just like I went to private kindergarten when I was a kid. And they paid for that. So, and my parents always, Dad was a World War II vet. When the vets came back from World War II, and Friedman was a vet, by the way, they really are the founders of the schools as we know them nowadays. Friedman, after Brown, I keep repeating that, after Brown, proposed his model, which is an economic model, not an educational model. And if you read everything he wrote, the ultimate goal is everybody pays for their own education eventually. So, and he said, well, if we go through this phase with vouchers, which he substituted charter schools for when vouchers were not approved. And every time vouchers have been put in front of the general public, they voted them down. So that's an interesting fact to know. It's really the federal government's money that has come in. So when Fried famously referred to public schools as government schools, and yeah, local government. Local government is for sure.
But well, even
what he
that,
was proposing,
right,
and this is kind of.
Yeah, keep going, Curtis.
Go ahead.
No, it's just when go ahead.
What they've created is a mentality that public education is I don't want to say a handout, that it's a, what's the word I'm thinking of? That you're entitled to the money. And that should be the antithesis of what Republicans believe in. And that's when you see abuses of vouchers, et cetera, it's that entitlement mentality that comes up.
Well, you know,
even Friedman's plan, it was mostly to pay.
It was. And even that, as you indicate, though, too, is that his ultimate goal was no funding whatsoever for schooling, that schooling was, you know, truly the responsibility of the parents and it should be paid for. This whole idea of government vouchers, this is not what Friedman would have wanted as his ultimate end. As you said, Curtis, this was a step in the direction of getting away from publicly funded public schools and giving that money back to the parents. But at the ultimate end of Friedman's move, is that there is no public education. There is no government subsidizing schools. Schools is a private enterprise. As you pointed out, it's a capitalistic component of our society. And parents, if you care about your kids, you'll make enough money to send them to the right schools. If you don't, well, too bad. We've got a market that will, you know, create another set standard of schools for those of you who don't have that money. And that, when we pivot that next to Horace Mann and Horace Mann's vision of saying, no, 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 public schools and the commitment to all children, whether their parents are the ones who can provide extras or the parents of kids who can't provide anything, that when you step into a public school, that vision of public schools is that the equity, the equality, the freedom to learn was not going to be hindered by your economic situation as a child, and that commitment of public schools was to say, and that is that part where we talk about this so often, Curtis, on the show, is that, you know, this isn't a battle necessarily for, you know, public education. This is a battle for the heart of democracy and recognizing, as you say, that we have a commitment when we are committed to the commons, to all children, to all families, and we expressly say that is a radical commitment to a democracy. And when people who want to get behind vouchers and Friedman, these are people that are fully involved in saying, you know, and I try to point this out to people and go, you're not for educational freedom. You're for educational fascism. You want a capitalistic view of education. You don't want all students to get what it is that they're required. You only want the privilege to get what they're allowed to get. And you set this up so that most kids would not get the best education. They would get the education their parents could afford. And therefore, we would have this multiple tiered education system. And think about this, too. Even in our public school system, we already do have this tiered inequities that we're trying to alleviate. But it's only in a public system where we can actually have these conversations about how to get to equity.
Correct. Yeah, one of the original arguments was different. Well, the quality of your education in the public schools depended on where you live. But, you know, in 1994, before Arizona started even charters, they opened up the public schools to open enrollment. Mm. And 93,000, that's more than are taking vouchers, have selected other districts in right. this state. And it's probably up to 95,000, but my latest statistic, because I track that, is 93,000. And there's no compensation to the home district for taking those kids. So it's an unfunded mandate.
Yeah, right. Right. It is.
And normally, right.
Well, and so we put that forward out there. Yeah, the unfunded mandate. It's Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. It's educated educators talking education. Our guest is Curtis Cardine. His new book, Horace's Hope, Freedman's Folly, the Purpose and Promise of Public Common Schools in a Democratic Republic. We're digging into it, talking about Horace Mann, Freedman, vouchers, public schools, common schools. If you have a question, make sure you give us a call. Hey, if you remember Horace Mann, or if you have something to tell us about Freedman, let us know, 855-752-4842. More with Curtis Cardine when we get back. Yeah, Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk, Educated Educators Talking Education. The number is 855-752-4842. Oh, man, it is the show. We have got a great guest, Curtis Cardine. He just published a new book, Horace's Hope, Freedman's Folly, The Purpose and Promise of Public Common Schools in a Democratic Republic, getting reacquainted with Horace Mann, Milton Friedman, and recognizing, too, that Milton Friedman's vision of private schools and vouchers, not the same thing in what we see now, tons of vouchers out there that, and particularly in some of these states, no real indication that they're ever going to go away because it's the new entitlement that's been put out there. Curtis, before we get back to you and some questions, though, we do have a caller on the line, caller Joanne. We love when Joanne's calling. Yeah, let's take her call. Joanne, what's happening, our friend?
What a great show. I just have a couple of fast facts and a question about Horace Mann. He was the youngest of 15 children. That's what I remember from my some education course a long time ago. And the other thing he did, mm-hmm. which relates to our conversation, is that when he was the secretary of the Massachusetts school commission, whatever that was labeled then, he visited every single school, which today you think, oh, yeah, he got this Buick and drove. No, he, you know, horseback carriage and all that, visited, and there was an oversight. And I think that something that's missed in those early days that he developed was this idea of accountability that Friedman didn't harbor. He wasn't the big guy into let's find out what these schools are doing. Let's visit every single one of these charter schools, make sure every single one is serving people in the best possible way. Horace Mann had that, and Friedman didn't. So great book. I'm going to buy it as soon as I get off the line and can get over to Amazon. Thank you so much. Or my local book dealer, I should say. Thank you so much.
Well, it's only on Amazon at this point.
We'll get it. Joanne, thank you so much for the call. Always appreciate Joanne. Curtis, Joanne calls in quite often. So the fact that she's saying great show. Curtis, you know, one of the things, though, we talk about privatization. You talk about this in your book and its effect on our sense of community. Tell me a little bit more about like how privatization erodes community.
Well, number one, I like to point out to people from Texas that they're giving up Friday night lights when they give up on their public schools. Where did these people think all their pro players, et cetera, come from? Or their college players? It's mostly the public schools, certainly not somebody going to MMA for their phys ed class. The other thing I'm getting data on is how many of them volunteer for anything else when they graduate? Like, what's their rate of people going into the service? Which is one other thing that Milton Friedman was famous for back in the Vietnam era. He fought to get the draft ended because it should only be those who want to go or have to go to make money that go in. And I always was disappointed with that. So was General Westmoreland at the time. But he was a real capitalist about everything. And again, that's confusing capitalism, which is our economic system and works great with our form of government, which is Democratic Republic. I'd like to throw in another thing about Horace Mann.
Absolutely.
He succeeded in his later life. He replaced John Quincy Adams in the Congress. And he also defended the crew in the greatest escape of slaves ever. You don't hear about that too much. It was called the Pearl Incident. And he was the lawyer, because that was his first training as a lawyer. He defended the crew, lost, and then the two presidents later, they were freed. But in that era, he was active in a lot of things. He chose Salem for a normal school because Salem has always been integrated from day one. The Salem school districts.
So that was his model.
Know this, but school district. That was his model. That's what he was after. Yeah, freed blacks, etc. There's a famous poster from the Civil War, and it's promising freed blacks or blacks who had escaped, if they join the Union Army, what they'll get out of that is freedom for the slaves and public schools. That was a solemn promise on those things. They didn't say, we'll send you to private school. They didn't say, we'll give you money to go to school. They said, public schools.
Right.
And you know that the Union troops, when they captured North Carolina, South Carolina, they were famously followed by teachers from Salem.
Oh, it's Busted Pencils. It's fully leaded education talk. 855-752-4842 is the number. Our guest author, Curtis Cardine, his book, Horse's Hope, Friedman's Folly, The Purpose and Promise of Public Common Schools in a Democratic Republic. We're discussing it. Curtis, we got another caller, though, on the line right there. We've got Mark, our friend, calling in. Mark, what's happening, our friend?
Yeah, and thanks so much for this topic. I mean, public schools are so important. That's why I went to school, is a small rural public school far in northern Wisconsin. That first grade was Oakland School, and they closed that one down. And I went to a school called Parkland School, far northern Wisconsin, just south of Superior. That I really appreciate the education that I got there. I mean, I still have a hunger for educating myself. I mean, but it seems to me that from reading I've done since then, that anti-democratic forces oppose education. Because let's face it, in the old South, the antebellum South, it was illegal for people to teach their slaves to read. I mean, they actually made pass laws to make it illegal to teach slaves how to read.
Yes.
And I think that says something about, you know, that what that society is like and what the society we see today. I see echoes of that in some of what I see today in the whole privatization of schools, that there's the kind of, we do not want people all taught equally, and of course those schools aren't required to meet the same standards as the public schools. I mean, that they don't have to, you know, measure up to the same standards. They don't have to accept everybody. They can pick and choose who they want to be. And I just think it's another, perhaps not strictly racial segregation, but it's another segregation of our children, where, you know, I think I benefited from, you know, a mixed group of kids that I went to school with. I mean, I think there was just one or two black kids in my neighborhood, and I think they went to the Catholic school in town. But I mean that it geography where I lived. But I mean that I benefited from all sorts of different other kinds of kids that I went to school with, and I just don't think that this whole privatization effort is just it's just an attempt to destroy democracy.
Absolutely. Mark, thank you so much for always giving us a call from Prairie du Sac. Appreciate Mark calling in. Ben Curtis, so, you know, Mark really pointed to this, and it is one of the questions I had for you, but, you know, you laid out too of saying that, you know, understand that where the privatization and the voucher movement from Milton Friedman came from was a direct result of saying we don't want the effects of Brown versus the Board of Education. We want to resegregate. And so this put forward, now here we are in 2024. Do you think vouchers are creating a new segregation?
Yes, and a different type. The Christian right, I hope, will be shocked by the next paper we put out on this issue. But there's 28 different religions that are collecting money on the voucher program. And I'm not just talking Christian. There's 20 sects of Christianity. We all believe different things. The Catholics, I'm Catholic, so I can say this, they take the most. But there's Islamic schools. There's Jewish schools. There's all these other types of schools. And I think they're going to be shocked when they find that out. I certainly hope they are. But we're dividing up by religion. We're dividing up by socioeconomic group. Certainly, if you give me $8,000 voucher, I'm not going to be able to attend the $36,000 a year private school if I'm poor. But
right.
you can offset what I have to pay if I'm wealthy to begin with. And that's a huge problem. We're becoming, and it shows up in our politics, we're becoming totally separated.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Curtis.
No, you got another point there. Okay. Go ahead for it.
Having public schools and the federal government getting involved in education has to do with the fact that in World War I, the majority of the soldiers, this is pre-all private schools, were illiterate. Okay. World War II, the first generation to benefit from that, they volunteered at a high rate because they had community sense. And then when they came back from World War II, they made the public schools the best they could and served on school boards, etc. It touches me whenever I watch a World War II documentary, see what those people went on to do after they got back from that. And being on school boards and teaching were all evident. And that's the other thing we don't talk about. Most of the male teachers, and since they've started having more females in the service, most of the male teachers I served with were veterans. You know, I was a Marine. The guy who was my best man was a Marine, then he was a Navy captain. So before he became a teacher. A lot of Vietnam vets in my era. And when I see teachers nowadays getting beat up, well, you're not teaching them good history about America, I'm saying, you know who you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of Gulf War veterans teaching now.
Mm, yeah. There's so much involved here, too. It, you know, and again, our guest, Curtis Cardine, his book right now, you can only get it on Amazon, but make sure you go there. Horace's Hope, Friedman's Folly, The Purpose and Promise of Public Common Schools in a Democratic Republic. Lot there to learn. So just about at the end of our time here, Curtis, but Joanne, I just bringing this part up, though. Horace Mann was one of the youngest of 15 kids, really?
That's correct. And he was very religious, by the way, himself. Mm. Mm. But one of his brothers drowned while swimming on Sunday. Oh. And the next week, the pastor, Edmonds, his name was, and he, same religion as Betsy DeVos, by the way, did a fire and brimstone thing about how people who did things like that would go to hell and be burning forever. Mm. And Horace saw his mother blanch at that one. And that's one of the reasons why he was against it. Mm. Other interesting story, you want to get the mindset of the founding fathers. He was from Franklin, Massachusetts, mm-hmm. named after guess who? Benjamin Franklin. When the town fathers asked him to donate a bell to the church in honor of him being the town being named after him, he refused. Hmm. And he said, no, I'll give you a library. And that library still exists in Franklin. Wow. That was the mindset of most of our founders.
Nice stuff. Our guest, Curtis Cardine. Curtis, thank you so much for busting pencils with us.
You're welcome.
All right. Glad and when we get back, Tim and Anya are going to break it down, and we got a phone call. TJ, hold on there. We're going to get you right when we get back. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. The number is 855-752-4842. Just had a great discussion with author Curtis Cardine, 50 years experience in education, wrote the book, Horace's Hope, Friedman's Folly, The Purpose and Promise of Public Common Schools in a Democratic Republic. Some great callers, Joanna from Madison, Mark from Prairie du Sac, thanks for calling. And we right now, though, speaking of callers, got another caller, TJ from Wales. TJ, what's happening?
Got a quick question for you. What do you think
We lost you there, TJ.
TJ, can you try going again for me, friend?
Oh, are you there?
Yes, we are now.
Okay. What do you think about public schools starting?
Hmm.
Got a bad connection. When you're talking, we lose you about halfway through your sentence.
TJ, hang up and maybe give us a call back and see if we get a better line on that. Really appreciate that. Hey, and you know what, too, if you want to, you can give us a call. Number's 855-752-4842. Horace Mann. So, Anya, what do you think about the youngest of 15? Okay, this brings up the question of going, Mom, whoa.
Mom and dad maybe needed to just kind of find another hobby. Yeah, I always feel as an only child, I was raised an only child. I have half siblings, but I always feel for people who were raised with so many siblings because I don't know how they do it. And to imagine someone who has over 10 to be the youngest of 15, 1-5, that is... It helps me understand why this man was so passionate about kids being in a building for 8 hours a day with someone in charge of them who wasn't, you know, maybe your older sister who was probably put in charge of some of the babysitting when mom was maybe also busy with the younger ones. Does that sound right to people with a lot of siblings? That's often what I've observed as a non-siblinged person.
But 15, so and I know this is kind of off the topic, but I mean, geez, yeah, as you're saying, it's like, I mean, I had two, and I'm glad we had two. It was nice. And, you know, I know some people with three, but you start moving in anything after that, you're like, what in the world? Hey, and then Tom from New Berlin, Green Day, love, like the Busted Pencils. Tom from New Berlin, thanks for sending in a text. Really appreciate that. And TJ, yeah, if you're still out there, give us a call. We'll try it again.
I think we have TJ back on the line. Let's give it a shot here. TJ, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
All right, let's try this.
What is your viewpoint on public schools starting their own charter schools also? It's kind of like a hybrid of the old gifted and talented program where they're starting them.
Yeah, okay, great question, TJ. So when you're talking about the public schools, and we've had this conversation around charters and what does it mean to be a charter, and you know, we've looked at this to say, okay, if the district itself is the, you know, kind of authorizing this and this ability, so the local school district and some teachers get together with some community members, and you know, some people may remember them as magnet schools, where this the idea. And it's the public schools, but they're allowed to have, you know, maybe a mission around STEM. They might have a mission around the arts, but they're really putting that together. But what keeps them public, and this is why this is the one form of a charter school that I feel very supportive of, is that they are still under the district control and thereby then accountable to the school board of which was elected from the community. And that is, to me, that's that essentialness with the democratic society there. And so in that form, you know, that's a public charter school. What's happening now with every charter school trying to call themselves public is that a lot of the charter schools fall outside of those types of boundaries that I just laid out. And you may have the authorizer of a charter school being a private school management company that puts together. And the only public part about it is that public money funds it, but the ability for the public to have the transparency to know what's happening in those schools disappears. And so, TJ, I don't know, does that help answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. What do you, so that to me is the charter school, that's a public charter school. So we start to have some other kinds of ideas, but yeah, you know, great call. Really appreciate that. Joanne, Love that you called. Mark giving us a call. TJ too. And TJ, I think you're a first time caller. Really appreciate that. And again, encourage more first time callers to give us a call. Great conversation tonight, Tuesday night. Busted Pencils. Yeah, you know, awesome stuff. Johnny Lupinacci in the air. He said over Wisconsin right now as we're talking. So Johnny Lupinacci, man, stay up in the air until that plane comes down. And the next time, you know, Johnny, when you're going through past Wisconsin, you know, if you stopped at the Minocqua Brewing Company, who sponsors Busted Pencils, you would get to hang out with the people who sued the state of Wisconsin to end the voucher system that hurts public schools. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer. Got a new text coming in on the line there. John from Milwaukee. My dad always said after the third kid, it got easier. The kids started to raise themselves. For the record, I ended up with 8 siblings, just like my dad had. And I'm not sure about his philosophy. I don't know. But
you had a baseball team, didn't you? And you can always rest on, you could have gone semi-professional, that little team of 8.
Yeah. You know, and that is the one thing you think, you know, 8, 15. At what point do the parents go, you know what? Hey, it's the brothers and sisters are raising the rest of those kids. We're done. We just made them.
You can almost be an empty nester early. The rest of the nest takes care of it.
Yeah. I mean, you've got a whole army of childcare advocates right there when you have 15 children. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk Tuesday night. Great show. Curtis Cardine, really appreciate it. Check out his book, Horace's Hope, Friedman's Folly, The Purpose and Promise of Public Common Schools in a Democratic Republic. Tomorrow night, Educators Amplified. Yeah, Teacher Hallie, Teacher Joanna in the house. We're going to be rocking it. Busted Pencils. Have a good night and see y'all tomorrow.